He's a NASCAR guy with a basement shrine, a Langford fan for life. Chargers are off to a terrible start, but that won't change his mind. Matching up all the cornerbacks, touchdown regression and weekly stats. But if your team falls flat, he's the one to blame. He's a Brainiac, Brainiac on the case, with projections that can put us in first place. He's a Brainiac, Brainiac, he's my Clay.
The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Go to geico.com today. Happy Tuesday to you, Phil Yates, and Mike Clay hanging out with you, along with Daniel Dopp. Mike, we have not heard from you in a while. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You haven't heard from me because I've been kind of in the bunker, just researching, preparing for the 17-game season, getting the projections ready for next season, writing capsules for next season. So I've been busy, guys, but now I have all of this information ready to go and looking forward to sharing a little bit with you guys here over the next hour.
Mike is basically ESPN's scout or GM because it's been relatively quiet on the NFL news front, specific transactions, and we'll talk about one that did take place on Monday in just a moment. But it's been relatively quiet, right? It's been a lot of just sort of holding patterns until April 29th when the NFL draft begins. Mike is like GMs and coaches right now that are just in the bunker, redoing their boards, watching more tape on players, setting the draft board, resetting the draft board, preparing for possible trade scenarios. You, Mike, who is your favorite GM in the NFL?
Well, I mean, as an Eagles fan, I would have to, I would say Howie Roseman, but as an objective observer of the NFL, I mean, come on, how do you not say Bill Belichick, right?
Of course.
I mean, I have my University of Belichick shirt, my t-shirt. I'm not wearing it right now, but I have one of those. I've always been a longtime supporter. It's the name of some of my fantasy teams as well. Look, the guy is, what else is there to say, right? He's the best in the business. You could pick him apart for wide receiver draft selections all you want, but man, he knows how to build a team, build a defense and coach them up as well. So I'll go that direction. And we know Field, he grinds away all off season as well. So yeah, he's a good guy to follow.
Yeah. Say Bill Belichick's idea of a vacation is watching the American Atlantic Conference tape from mid season games between two schools that have like one draftable player apiece. But you mentioned that Patriots have had some struggles drafting a wide receiver, but there are some notable exceptions. Mike, is on Monday, we learned news that Julian Edelman had retired from the NFL after 12 seasons. And while we think it's an incredible accomplishment for anybody to make the NFL, whether you play for a year or 12 years, and we don't want to not pay homage to the guys that do retire and walk away. Certainly we have a special eye for those that have a dominant fantasy run. And Mike, Julian Edelman is an amazing story in a lot of ways. He is a college quarterback, 7th-round pick who worked out for the Patriots. I believe with their running back coach, their wide receiver coach, special teams coach. He wasn't supposed to make it this far in the league, and he did. And along the way, he became a very useful fantasy football wide receiver as well.
Yeah, he absolutely did. And, I actually just tweeted this yesterday. I thought it was interesting. If you look at the games he was on the field for, going all the way back to 2013, right? So he missed a full season in there. But if you look back at his past 7 target shares when he's played, 26%, 26, 26, 29, 26, 26, 23. I mean, that is big time usage, right? I mean, that's among the league leaders. And it just shows you how reliant that offense has been on him, how consistent he's been on when he's been on the field. That even includes last season when Tom Brady was not there. So heavily utilized, a super consistent producer, and it's a huge void for this Patriots passing game, and they're going to have to try to find a way to fill that. So a terrific legacy, and they'll miss him obviously in the playoffs and throughout the regular season as well.
Sure. Yeah. And the Patriots most likely will turn to a Kendrick Bourne type player in the slot, very gifted route runner they signed in free agency this offseason. One thing I'll say, and I don't want to get on the soapbox for too long here, Mike, but I did find it interesting that a player who had this, as we mentioned, remarkable story, right? I mean, if Edelman had just made the roster for the Patriots, it was an accomplishment. He went on to become one of the iconic figures during big moments in the Super Bowl, right? Three-time Super Bowl winner, Super Bowl MVP. He retires like 90 seconds later, the entire world pivots to whether he's a Hall of Famer or not. It's like, you know, there's something in between, like, you know, not being a Hall of Famer or being a Hall of Famer, and also just like enjoying and cheersing to a really good career. So Edelman walks off with nothing but pride and accomplishment after 12 seasons with the Patriots. And the bulk of today's show is going to be us, Mike Clay and I, going back and forth on some players as the initial ESPN fantasy rankings have been set for 2021. Keep in mind, the draft will shake things up and potential other trades could shake things up as well. And we'll continue to update them throughout the offseason. But this is the point of the show where I hand the baton off to Daniel Dopp, who is going to play point guard with Mike and I, and we'll work through some of the more interesting rankings conversations that arose based off of our first run. Again, I will stress that again. First run of 2021 rankings.
The first initial rankings we have. Obviously, these are going to change once we have drafted players and we get farther into the offseason. But I just think this is really interesting. I want to get into this conversation. So starting with quarterbacks. I'm looking at Cam Newton right now. Mike, you've got Cam Newton at 13. Field has him at 19. I have him at 20. And he's across the board, just a pretty polarizing quarterback right now. Tristan Cockcroft has him at quarterback 20. Matthew has him at quarterback 12. My question is, Mike, I'm going to start with you. What we saw from Cam last year was obviously a lot of rushing touchdowns. We have not seen a ton of weapons added to that offense. There have been some wide receivers. There have been some tight ends. I'm curious, if you think that you have Cam as quarterback 13, does that mean that the rushing production continues? Or do you think that as that rushing production maybe regresses to the mean, that you're going to see an increase in that passing game production in order to get Cam these fantasy points?
Well, first of all, typical anti-Patriots bias from Field. I mean, I think that's obvious and expected. We'll cross that off the list right off the bat. But no, we all knew Cam came out really strong last season, right? I mean, he was a star in fantasy out of the gate. He had a pair of top six fantasy weeks. And then, of course, he went on the COVID list and never really came all the way back. And obviously, he only had the one weekly finish better than eighth after that point. So even though that happened, even though for three quarters of the season, he wasn't really dominating in fantasy, he still ended up QB 15, right? Because of what he did with his legs and what he did early on in the season. So, we know he's going to deliver in that department. He's still 32 years old. He's going to be productive with his legs, but I think they're going to throw the ball more, right? They'll be a run first offense. Don't get me wrong. He's going to score a lot of rushing touchdowns, but I do think with the moves they made this offseason, they should have a better, perhaps a good or even great offensive line. I think they have the bodies there to be that. But then you bring in Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith and Nelson Agholor and Kendrick Bourne, and Jacoby Myers was efficient last season, effective as in place of Edelman. Maybe N'Keal Harry. We'll see if he makes the team. I think you add that all up, they can open up the offense more. They could throw it a little more, and that leads to Cam getting back at least into the weekly streaming conversation or QB1 conversation for me. I think this is where he belongs. Now, look, guys, if they move up or they land a quarterback in the draft, that player will start some games next season. Most likely I'll have to move Newton down. But as the roster stands, I think he's in that top 12 conversation.
Yeah, Mike, I think everything you said is well-rooted, as always, because you're Mike Clay. A couple of things I'll just mention, because I am a little bit lower on Cam Newton, is one, I've baked in the possibility the Patriots do wind up with a first-round quarterback. Not necessarily counting on it. It's hard to get a quarterback at 15, and it's hard to move up because you got to pay a really, really steep price. But it at least seems plausible right now. And the second part is that you are absolutely right. I mean, for basically the worst case scenario of circumstances, Cam finished as quarterback 15 last year. He's going to be better than that this year, just based off of the pieces around him that Mike outlined, plus a full year of development in the system, being healthy, hopefully the NFL not dealing with any sort of COVID restrictions by the time the season begins in September. It's just a matter of whether I think the upside that he presents is the same as some of the players that I have ranked ahead of him. And once we get past like 10 or 12, Mike, some of these conversations are six in one hand, half dozen in the other, right? But a couple of players that I'm slightly more optimistic on include the likes of Carson Wentz, your guy, Baker Mayfield, I have ranked a little bit higher than Cam as well. Matt Ryan, who I presume will be the starter to at least begin the season in Atlanta, and potentially a guy who has just an embarrassment of riches again at his disposal. So you're talking me into Cam a little bit more, but at the same time, I saw a player that has a lot to prove based off how we finished the last, let's call it 8 or 9 weeks of last season.
Sure.
Yep.
Mike, you want to go back on that? Yeah,
I was just going to say, I think that all makes sense. Just something to keep in mind. And this is not, you know, necessarily where these guys will land in ESPN drafts, but early on ADP, we could start to get a feel for it, right? Just start to get a loose, if you do best ball drafts or whatever it is, you can kind of get a feel where guys are going to go. And Cam's going super late, you know, very, very late in the last couple of rounds of drafts. Just something to keep in mind. He can end up being a value play. Even if you just stream him when the matchup is right, just something to think about. It's very early, but right now, an extremely cheap investment in fantasy drafts.
Both of you alluded to the idea that maybe the Patriots draft a quarterback in this draft. Field Yates is going to be hosting the First Draft podcast. And Mel Kiper's latest mock draft 4.0 just came out today. He actually had the Patriots landing Justin Fields in mock draft 4.0. So head on over to the First Draft feed, check that podcast out. There's going to be a lot of conversation there about that. All right. I want to talk about another quarterback and somebody that I think is really interesting here. Ryan Tannehill. And I realize right now, based on these rankings from the three of us, Mike, you've got him at 11. You've got him at 13. I have him at 15. And admittedly, I think I'm a little bit low on Ryan Tannehill. I think you should be closer up to that 12 to 13 range. But this is a quarterback that over the last 2 years has finished the past two seasons as a top 10 quarterback. He was quarterback 4 in total points. Damien sent me this. Quarterback 4 in total points, quarterback 7 in points per game since taking over as the starter in Tennessee. And yet we still do not have him ranked as a top 10 quarterback. So my question is the loss of Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, who I didn't think accounted for that much of what we thought of Ryan Tannehill's value, really that big? Or do we just not necessarily believe that Ryan Tannehill is this guy who is going to repeat as a top 10 quarterback, even though we've seen 2 years of consistency from him already? Field, I want to start with you because it's a polarizing conversation. No one's saying he's not talented, but we just don't have him in that echelon of quarterbacks right now.
Yeah, sure, Daniel. And I want to start by noting that, like, and I don't want to rely on this answer every single time we talk about a quarterback that's not in the top 10, but just like think about the players that we have in the top 10. And I'm just going to read them in the order that I have them ranked. Mahomes, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. Obviously an asterisk next to Deshaun Watson as we don't know what's going to happen with the legal case. But if he's playing, obviously he's a very uniquely talented guy. Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Justin Herbert, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. That's my top 10 right there. So if you're going to move Ryan Tannehill up into that top 10, you are obviously replacing one of those players. And while there are some that I think are closer to a toss-up than a wide, wide gap between the two of them, I do think that part of this is just the depth of the position. And then what you mentioned as well, Daniel, is that while Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith never reached consistent peak excellence in fantasy, very useful players. We all believe Jonnu Smith's probably bound for maybe a breakout in New England because of the role that he's likely to take on relative to the one that he had in Tennessee. So it's just, if you look around the NFL, not that many quarterbacks saw an exodus of talent amongst our skill guys, quite like Ryan Tannehill did. So it's a slight discount as a result of those factors. Mike, what about you? You have him at 11, I believe. So you're not that far down on Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel low on him too. But like you said, there's just so many good options. And we're going to really see that at wide receiver. But you also can apply it a bit at quarterback. Look, the guy has 66 touchdowns and 13 interceptions since he took over. He's been unbelievable. Elite completion rate and YPA. The guy has been super effective. But the one person we did not mention as missing starting in 2021 that he's had at his disposal the past couple of years is Arthur Smith, right? You know, how much of a game changer is he? Arthur Smith is operated a very run heavy offense and found a way to unlock Ryan Tannehill, not to mention Derrick Henry and AJ Brown and even Corey Davis last season, Jonnu Smith to some extent. He's gone and he's off to Atlanta. So how much does that impact this scheme? So you lose that personnel, you lose Smith, you have a guy who is still likely to be working in a run heavy offense. Remember, Tannehill, as efficient as he was 18th in pass attempts last season. And that's always going to be a red flag for me. You know, it's volume over efficiency, number one, first and foremost in fantasy football. He does add some value with his legs, but not to the extent of Allen or Murray or even Prescott, you know, maybe not even Justin Herbert, who knows how much he'll maximize his legs going forward. So I think he's a borderline top 10 option. If you wait forever a quarterback and end up with him as your starter, I think you'll be okay. But again, I don't think he's really going to be a major difference maker as a QB1.
Yeah, I got to say this just as somebody who loves, like, I'm 100% on the Tannehill wagon. And I know I said that last year when we made the joke about it, but I love Ryan Tannehill. I love seeing a guy that struggled early in his career, finally came on playing at a really level. They need to find a way with Derrick Henry to make sure that they're utilizing him for QB sneaks at the goal line, because you know that defenses are always keying in on Derrick Henry inside the five. So the way that he's had 11 rushing touchdowns over the last two seasons, I mean, you can have some really great little plays that can help get him in the end zone and boost that fantasy value. So I hope they continue that after him having five rushing touchdowns last year. All right. I want to project ahead and talk about some running backs here really quickly. And Mike, I'm going to start with you. Looking at Joe Mixon, last year he had a career high in catches and targets per game. Obviously, Giovanni Bernard no longer with the Bengals, but I feel like Joe Mixon is that guy that everybody has been an apologist for and trying to find a way to say that he's going to break out again. This year is the year, and this is the reason why. This year is the year, and this is the reason why. And we've had that the past couple of seasons. So now we've got a better offense. You've got Joe Burrow coming back for his second season. You've got some really great wide receivers. You've got Giovanni Bernard vacating touches in that backfield. Joe Mixon right now for you, running back 15. Field, you have him at running back 14. I have him at running back 20. Help me suss out this Joe Mixon, you know, fantasy value, because I could see both sides. It's an emotional game, and maybe people are out on the idea of, I've been here on Joe Mixon before. Make me feel like it's any different.
Yeah, see, the thing with Mixon is there's some recency bias, of course, because he missed so much time injured last season. And that kind of grosses people out, especially if you drafted him last year. And also, and we're going to talk all about this all offseason long, running back in the first couple rounds of the draft is oversaturated. There's just so much young up-and-coming talent. We haven't even injected the rookies into the conversation yet. There's probably going to be three rookies that are in good spots as in their first year in terms of potential fantasy production. So there's just so many names in that area, and that pushes guys like a Mixon or maybe even a Miles Sanders down a few pegs. But here's the thing with Mixon. If you look back to his last – essentially his full season back in 2019, he was RB13 in fantasy points. He handled three quarters of the carries and 8% of the targets. I mention that because last season when he was healthy, he handled 81% of the carries and 12% of the targets. He was RB10 in fantasy points, doing even better, seeing even more passing game volume. And now, of course, Giovanni Bernard is gone. I'm sure he'll be replaced. I'm sure they'll bring in maybe a Duke Johnson type or another, or maybe a rookie passing down compliment, someone to help out Joe Mixon. But nonetheless, he is one of the few workhorses in the NFL. He's going to be busy in that backfield. They may draft an offensive lineman in the first round. Jonah Williams looked solid last year. Joe Burrow is going to be back healthy. The arrow is pointing up for this offense, and I think for Joe Mixon as well, who is, by the way, only 24 years old, still one of the younger backs in the NFL. So I think he bounces back in a big way here in 2021.
Super talented player that we've kind of always wanted to be a little bit better, Mike, right? Like he was a player that we thought could immediately change the Bengals offense when he was drafted. Obviously, we know that his past transgressions that took place during his time in Oklahoma were the reason why he slid to the second round. Not sure that he's ever realized that dominant stretch consistently, and that's part of the reason why I think there will be some people that just stay away from the scent entirely this offseason, as you noted. But a guy that on paper has a lot of things going in his favor that you just outlined. And you know, I think it's important to sometimes track this stuff. Like the Bengals put their money where their mouth was before last season. They gave him a four-year, $48 million extension. You don't do that at the running back spot unless you have aspirations of making him your guy on a nearly down in, down out basis. So I still have some reservations about Joe Mixon, Daniel, but it's going to be really hard for me to ignore him inside my top 15 to 18 of running backs. I guess I actually have it 14, so call it 14 to 18 of running backs.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. Excuse me. It's an emotional game, fantasy, and when you've had Joe Mixon on your roster the last couple of years or you've been excited about what's going to happen, that's one of the things to be able to make sure that you're sussing out as a part of this. And for me, Mixon is just one of those players that I hope to be able to see that next step here that we feel like we've been waiting for the last little bit. You know, Mike, you had touched on a lot of the younger running backs that we have and just the glut of running backs we have at the top of this class. I'm looking at guys like Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, all guys that we all have inside our top 12, all three sophomore running backs. And I want to ask a couple questions about this, because Jonathan Taylor came on really strong towards the end of the season, obviously struggled a little bit in the early stages and middle of the season, but really put together towards the end of the year. Cam Akers, same way, you know, was not the de facto guy for the entire season, but towards the end of last year and then the playoffs, put together some really great games. And then DeAndre Swift, no Adrian Peterson. It looks like Kerryon Johnson might play a little bit less of a role in that offense. So we've got three sophomore running backs inside the top 12. I just kind of want to suss out how you guys feel about these guys, because there's a lot of upside for us to say that these are low-end RB1s after a shortened offseason last year and what we saw from them as rookies last year. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Jonathan Taylor, what is it that you like about Taylor, and why is it that you see him as a top 10 running back in his second year?
Well, I mean, he was last year, right? I mean, he finished RB6 in fantasy points, and guys, that was with one top 12 in his first 10 games. So think about how dominant he was in the final month and a half of the season to get all the way back up to six. It was unbelievable. He averaged 5 yards per carry. That was top 10 running back. He also caught 88% of his targets, which was first among running backs. 7.3 yards per target was second. So he was highly effective as both a rusher and receiver. Anthony Cassonzo has retired, yes, but the Colts are still working on replacing him. Maybe move a Quentin Nelson outside. We'll see what they do in the draft to figure that out. But that offensive line will still be pretty good. And look, I know Marlon Mack re-signed. I don't think he's going to be much of a factor. You have Nyheim Hines in passing situations, fine, but Taylor is just too good. He's a super athlete. He's 22. He was third in rushing yards as a rookie, as mentioned, disappearing from that offense at times in the first couple months of the season. So I think the light went on for this kid, and he's just too good. And honestly, I thought I was going to be too low on him. Like, I thought I was going to be one of the people saying, you know, you have to worry about volume here and targets, but it turns out that there's a path here for him in this run first, high scoring offense to be a solid or even a breakout RB1. So I like him. And I think of the three, he is the clear best choice, though Akers and Swift are both borderline RB1s as well. All these young guys have passed to big time touch totals here in 2021.
Yeah, it feels to me like the player that has the clearest path to big-time touch totals is actually Cam Akers, believe it or not. And if you're wondering why him versus DeAndre Swift, you know, I think Jamal Williams is a more useful player than maybe was given credit for during free agency. He signed a two-year deal worth $7.5 million, so $3.75 million per year. We saw him in Green Bay. He was always kind of a thorn in the side of Aaron Jones's workload. So I think Cam Akers probably has the best chance to be the guy in his backfield. Jonathan Taylor, though, probably is the safest bet here, Mike, even though I have him ranked 11th, Akers 9th, and Swift 10th. Like, you're sort of chasing upside with these rankings and some of these players in my rankings. You know, Taylor just – you noted it. I mean, I don't know that Marlon Mack coming off an Achilles tear plays a major role in this offense. I just know that the Colts and Chris Ballard, their GM, is often effusive in his praise of Marlon Mack. He just loves the guy. I think there's a lot of admiration for Marlon Mack in that organization. It's not a massive contract they paid him to return. I just wonder how much of a workload, because he's not the kind of player that, if he's not playing, it's hard to find a role for him if he's not touching the football as a runner every single game. Not a great pass catcher and not a special teams contributor. So it'll be interesting to see whether he chips into Jonathan Taylor's workload a little bit, as the Colts maybe have the big picture in mind, keeping guys fresh for a potential playoff run.
Yeah. Quick notes on those two guys. I'm with you. Look, Akers, I wonder if you look back at Sean McVay during his time with Todd Gurley, and man, did he run the ball when they were inside the five a ton. You've always seen a low pass touchdown rate for McVay's offenses because he used Gurley so much in that area. And actually last year, he did the same with Brown, Henderson, and Akers. So if they continue with that dynamic and they keep running the ball at the goal line, Akers can really thrive and hit double-digit touchdowns. I believe I have him with 11 or 12 touchdowns projected this season. So I like him. There's a lot to be excited about. The one thing I would say is, though, maybe they throw it more with Matthew Stafford. You know, now that they have the best quarterback of the McVay era, maybe they throw more touchdowns. So that's something to think about. As for Swift, over his head in the touchdown department, I'm really worried about, sorry, Daniel, I'm worried about Detroit in this rebuilding year. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Maybe they're headed the right direction, but they are rebuilding to some extent. And perhaps that leads to some struggles and a big drop in scoring opportunities. But We know he's going to be heavily involved in the passing game. We know he's super talented. So there are things to like here as well. So for me, it's Taylor and then a tier down to Akers, and then Swift is right behind.
Yeah, DeAndre Swift never got more than 16 carries in a game last season. And that's a thing that I'm hoping to be able to see them, how they want to utilize him this year. But, you know, to Fields' point, Jamal Williams is no slouch. You know, he's going to be able to come in and immediately be able to contribute in that backfield. And that's certainly going to take some touches away from DeAndre Swift as a part of that. As this conversation evolves, we look at all three of these sophomore running backs, and I am surprised a little bit that the guy who actually scored more fantasy points per game than all three of these in James Robinson is actually ranked lower than all three of these guys. So I'm curious for both of you, and Mike, I'm going to start with you. We saw James Robinson finish as RB7 last year. And the only reason that he was behind Jonathan Taylor is because of that monster close to the season that Jonathan Taylor had. James Robinson was actually a little bit more efficient on a per game basis. So are you seeing this more as a, just a regression to what James Robinson likely should have been last year? And you look at the touches and volumes of this offense, and that's kind of how you're projecting James Robinson and not being so caught up in how great that rookie season was last year.
Yeah, there's a few things. I mean, they also changed coaching staffs, which is important. I mean, you're hearing a lot of the hype, right? If you listen to Urban Meyer talk about the Jacksonville offense is about like their fifth and sixth string wide receivers. Like, we can't wait to use Philip Dorsett's speed and Jamal Agnew. Oh man, we can't wait to get Jamal Agnew out there. And they sign Marvin Jones. And of course there's Chenault and DJ Chark and Colin Johnson. Don't forget about him from last season. So, you know, you could see a little bit of an adjusted scheme here for sure. And also you're hearing Carlos Hyde hype. You know, he wanted to sign there and expects to play in this offense. Now look, as threats as number two running backs go, I mean, Hyde at age 29, I'm not sure is a major one. Other star running backs in the league have more competition for touches. All due respect to one of my favorite players in the NFL from the past decade, but Robinson is the young man who played 70% of the snaps and was very impressive last season. So look, I still like him. It's just crowded at running back at the top, and he doesn't have a lot of pedigree. And again, he was very reliant on that 70% snap share that actually took a dive late last season when and he also missed some time as well. So there's pluses here. There's minuses here for sure. But I do think maybe there's a step back. Also, touchdown regression to the mean. He had 10 touchdowns last year. His OTD was 5.9. So he about doubled that. That should come back to earth a little bit here in 2021. So again, I don't want to rip on the guy too much because he was so impressive, and he's probably going to be a solid or very good RB2, maybe a back end RB1. It's just, again, there's just a lot of names in that conversation.
That's one of the tough things about being able to look at these players is the idea that you're not speaking poorly about him. It's just, Fields, you've mentioned this before. When you have so many good players in front of them, it's almost like you're just trying to make the case as to how I slot them into different rankings.
Yeah, I would say that's the truth. And by the way, I really like James Robinson as a player. I know he got hurt down the stretch, missed like the last two games, I believe it was, due to an ankle injury. But if you go back and look at what worked in his favor is, and don't get me wrong, he had some huge, huge games, but like just being available really helped him as well, right? Some of the players that I have ranked ahead of James Robinson this year had disappointing seasons last year, just whether due to injury, whether it was due to circumstances like Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, obviously getting hurt. But some of the guys that I think have a chance to sort of right the ship from based on what I thought they would be going into last year, as opposed to what they actually were last year, are players that I have ranked ahead of James Robinson. But I love the player. Like, if you end up with him as your RB1, because you go with an early wide receiver tight end strategy, I don't think you're going to have many regrets about using that approach. Can I add one thing, speaking of a running back, just because I want to see everybody's sense, everybody's thoughts on this news. So James Conner has officially signed a one-year deal with the Arizona Cardinals. He went for a visit there yesterday, officially first reported by Jay Glazer. Mike, your thoughts on the addition of James Conner in Arizona to a backfield that, of course, otherwise features Chase Edmonds?
Yeah, I think it's a perfect fit. He's one of the, it's one of the dots I connected early on in the process, because I think he might be a better fit for this, the role, the Kenyon Drake role, than Kenyon Drake was, right? Because Drake, we always thought of as kind of a scat back, a guy who could handle maybe 12 carries and really deliver as a passing down weapon. But that's not what they did last season. They used Chase Edmonds in that role, of course, though he barely carried the ball when Drake was healthy. And then they used Drake as a guy that loaded up, was near the top of the NFL in carries, goal line carries, carries inside the five, touchdown opportunities. Connor is, you know, a bigger back and I think a better fit for that role. So I love it. It's good for Connor. It's good for his playing time. It's good for the team, I think, and to utilize him in that role and use Chase Edmonds more in a change of pace back role. So what I hope they do here is again, get Connor the maybe 12 to 15 carries a game, not much in the passing game, and then allow Edmonds to handle more carries than he did last season, but really focus in on the passing down work just like he did last season. That could allow them to be similarly valued, more like flex options in fantasy football. And I think that really maximizes the offense and their fantasy football output. So obviously, guys, this hurts Edmonds, you know, but there's something to keep in mind. There was a lot of hype for him. I'll just add this final note here. There was a lot of hype for Edmonds kind of the last couple of weeks before they signed Connor. You know, he has really benefited. His efficiency numbers have really benefited from running against nickel and dime defenses, just totally really light boxes. And that has really jacked up his efficiency. I think that that was going to kind of come back to haunt him a little bit, or haunt the people that drafted him, should they pick him up as maybe a borderline RB1. So this brings his value down a bit to where it should be, again, more in the PPR flex conversation.
You have such a great point there, Mike, about the context of his carries, right? Because the argument for Chase Edmonds being a workhorse was often, look at what happens when he gets the football, right? Well, mm-hmm. It's a little bit different when you're running against 5-6 defenders in the box versus a bunch of dudes who are, you know, sort of clamping down and getting ready to attack you in the backfield, like you often see defenses try to do against Derrick Henry, to not much success. So I do think that James Conner still has some, I still think there's something to prove here for James Conner in this backfield. I wouldn't be stunned if they had another guy in the draft, by the way, at the running back position. So James Conner, one-year deal for the Arizona Cardinals, a lot to prove for him and an opportunity to maybe reestablish himself as a legit workhorse back, Daniel.
Field, I love that transition. You are so good at your job, because there's another guy that I think has a ton to prove this year. Last year, we looked at Michael Thomas. He was the consensus wide receiver one coming into the season across the board. All of us, right? It was him and Davante Adams at the top. And now, after a season where he missed 9 games, he didn't score in 7 of the games that he did play. Now he does not have Drew Brees, although Drew Brees obviously was not the Drew Brees of old, what we have seen. But there's a lot of question marks surrounding Michael Thomas. You know, are you in on the idea that he can still be a top 5 guy with either Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill under center? And are you buying that Michael Thomas is still the top 5 wide receiver that he is? Or do you think that because of this quarterback change, you know, it's better to readjust him as a low-end wide receiver one than what we saw him to start last year?
All right. So, Daniel, I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth right now. I'm actually inside the ranking tool as we speak, and I want to move Michael Thomas down, because I'm not convinced Jameis Winston starting for the Saints this year. I just am not. And along those lines, we saw what happened. I know Michael Thomas fared okay with Taysom Hill as the starter last year, but I think we all agree that if Taysom Hill is the starting quarterback for the Saints, there's less passing upside than there would be if Jameis Winston was back there airing it out. So I'm having a hard time reconciling with Michael Thomas, just in the sense that I think he's a really talented player. I think that the 2019 season, this is not going very far out on a limb, will prove to be the best of his career. I mean, it's only one of the single greatest for season from a receiver ever. But I do think, you know, some wide receivers kind of caught up, so to speak, last year that proved that the wide receiver one conversation should not be as cut and dry as I made it out to be going into the 2020 season a year ago. So I'm going to move Michael Thomas down to closer to 10 as opposed to 5. Mike, what say you?
I say you should go to Twitter right now and tweet that you think Michael Thomas peaked in 2019 and 2019. See how that goes. The replies will be amusing. The replies will be amusing, but also Michael Thomas will let you know that that you're wrong. So
that's true. That's true.
You'll have some fun with that. But look, first of all, obviously you're right. But I will say this: even before that, he had 3 straight top 7 fantasy seasons, right? So he really was delivering for quite a while there. He emerged as one of the best wide receivers in the NFL even before exploding onto the scene with that record-breaking season. So I remember being hesitant on Thomas with Taysom Hill under center last season, because I thought, look, the guy's going to need a 30%+ target share to survive. And that's what he got. So even if Hill starts, I think he will force feed the ball to Thomas. Right now, they don't really have any other weapons. Jared Cook's gone. Emmanuel Sanders is gone. They're still going to add to that position, but right now he is the clear cut number one receiver, and he can see a similar target share to what he saw over the past couple of years. So I think Thomas is a mid to back end wide receiver one, not quite what he was a couple of years ago because there's no hyper efficient Drew Brees there. But again, still a wide receiver one option.
Yeah. You know, you guys both kind of mentioned this and alluded to these things. Last season, Thomas caught 34 of the 41 targets from Taysom Hill, but he did not catch a touchdown pass from him. And I just want to quickly look at, when you look back at Jameis Winston and where Michael Thomas has made his bread and butter, right? 71% of Thomas's career catches have come on balls thrown under 10 yards. And the one thing that Jameis Winston does is throw the ball deep. I mean, he is a guy, he does not, you know, Drew Brees, from 2018, that's right. From 2018 to 2020, Winston led all quarterbacks in air yards per throw with 10.3. In that same stretch where Drew Brees was Michael Thomas's quarterback, Brees was dead last at 6.5 yards per throw. So very different quarterbacks there. It's going to be really interesting and intriguing to see the way that Michael Thomas responds this year. Because Mike, you're right. He has had some consistent seasons before this, but there's a lot of question marks coming off of the injury last year and the quarterback change. All right. I have two more topics of conversation to be able to close this podcast out. And this first one is going to revolve around Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones, because Field Yates, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Right now, you are the highest on Julio Jones. You have him at 9. Both Mike Clay and I have him at 21. And you have Calvin Ridley at 11. Both Mike Clay and I have Calvin Ridley at 12 and 11. So you're the only ranker right now between the three of us that has Julio Jones ranked ahead of Calvin Ridley, but it's close. Even with Mike and I would think the disparity there is still close between the two, despite the rankings difference, just how good so many wide receivers are. I just want to hear your thoughts. Do you think that this is another season where Julio Jones stays healthy and he comes out on top of Calvin Ridley? Or do you think that this is a situation where Calvin Ridley and this offense potentially, you know, it's going to be a 1A, 1B situation like we've seen the past couple of years?
I don't want to take the easy way out in saying I don't know on Julio being able to stay healthy, because that's something, you know, we just don't know in general for any player, right? But it's worth noting that prior to last year, Julio had missed, and I'm just doing the math right now, 4 games in the previous 6 seasons. So to play all but 4 games, that's, I think that's 92 out of 96. Like, Julio doesn't have an injury history of missing time. We know that he is frequently on the injury report. In some games, he's doing pregame workouts. And there have been times where he was out there as nothing more than basically a distraction for the defense. That being said, I think he's going to remain healthy. And this sounds like kind of a, you know, it's funny when you ask, like, who's a better player than who? Like, Julio Jones is still a better player than Calvin Ridley. And I love Calvin Ridley. We all do, right? But Julio Jones just has, like, this ridiculously absurd special gear to him that makes him a likely Hall of Famer by the time it's all said and done, if not a lock already, right? One thing that we know has eluded Julio for so many years is elite touchdown production. He has just 1 year in his career with 10 or more receiving touchdowns. I have absolutely no idea what to chalk that up to. That is far more Mike's realm than mine. I just think that at his best, at his apex, an offense that I expect to be very good and exciting and high octane, Julio Jones is still one of the, I don't know, 7 to 8 most talented wide receivers. So I'm just betting on the talent here of Julio, but I can easily be talked out of this argument, Mike.
Yeah. So look, they played 5 full games together last season, and they were both top 5 fantasy wide receivers. So that's the good. I have two concerns here with Julio Jones. There's two reasons I knocked him down. One, and this one applies to Calvin Ridley as well, as a new offense, right? They're going to go from one of the most YOLO, wide open, pass heavy offenses of the past decade to probably a much more conservative, perhaps more efficient, but certainly a run first offense under Arthur Smith. That's what he ran in Tennessee, had a lot of success. That's what I expect in Atlanta. So that's one, and could bring down the target volume for both guys. The other is, yeah, Julio Jones has been very durable and very productive, but he's also 32 years old, and I dock him for it. You know, you just look through the ages of the top 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 wide receivers in your ranks, and guess what? You're not going to find many guys in their early to mid-30s. It's just not the way the league works, and these guys eventually fall off. So will he fall off this year? I don't know. You know, he might have another year of being a superstar left. It's you know, that would be an interesting research project. It's on my list. It's something I want to look into a little bit more before deciding where exactly I want to draft him next season. But right now I have docked him a little bit. And a part of the reason for that, guys, is again, have we mentioned this about any other positions? It's loaded. There's so much talent at wide receiver. You cannot help but disrespect dozens of players. It's just so, you know, we talk about all the positions being deep, but none like wide receiver. Just it's disgusting how many good players I have ranked in the 40s and 50s. So that's a part of the issue here with Julio as well.
Yeah, I am totally with you there. I mean, in looking at these wide receivers, it did feel disrespectful where it's like, I cannot believe that I have this guy this low, but I just couldn't find a way to get him higher because everybody else above him was so good in the first place. So I know that's a thing that all of us were feeling when we were doing our rankings. I want to close the podcast out with this conversation. Third year wide receivers, the season, and we hopefully see the biggest jump for a lot of these guys. They're putting it all together. They've been in the NFL for a couple of years, and we've got three big names, DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, and Terry Warren, all entering their third season. Field, I'm going to start with you, and I'm going to let you pick if there's one that you want to start with, but how much extra floor or ceiling do any of these three guys have? Because they've all already broken out as superstars in their position, let alone, you know, the idea that, hey, this third year is sometimes where we'll see that extra bump in production from a guy putting it all together now that they've become a veteran from this perspective.
Yeah, so I think we've got two tiers within this group of three players. It's the two former teammates, DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, and then Terry McLaurin. I love Terry McLaurin, but I think that AJ Brown and DK Metcalf are both superior talents in superior situations relative to their quarterback and their role, right? DK Metcalf last year showed it. He's got the best quarterback of the bunch, Russell Wilson, and we know that DK Metcalf being a legitimate top five option at the position doesn't mean that others in his offense aren't going to feast as well. It can happen concurrently, right? AJ Brown, I don't have any concerns about the knee. Stefania recently assured me, or assured all of us on the podcast, like it's not something we need to be entering the season with worries about. And in a perfect world, AJ Brown is challenging for top three in the NFL in targets. Like I'm talking borderline DeAndre Hopkins type stuff, right? 12, 13 a game should be a regular occurrence for him. We'll see whether that happens in that Tennessee offense. Love Terry McLaurin. When I say that he's not the same level of player as DK Metcalf and AJ Brown is, remind people that that's like just because those two guys, the former Ole Miss teammates, are special, right? Terry McLaurin is a very special player, just a slight cut below. And I love Ryan Fitzpatrick as a player. He's fun. He brings an infectious energy. He's also been a player that has been feast or famine at many junctures of his career. And Curtis Samuel has been added. I do think that they've got something special in Antonio Gibson. I think there's a chance that Terry McLaurin's workload is just a little bit less than the two I mentioned before, Metcalf and Brown. Mike, where would you differ, if at all, in that assessment?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. One thing I'll say about McLaurin is, you know, he got hurt by the quarterback change last season, right? His average depth of target dropped from 13.8 as a rookie to 9.6. And guys, what's the name of his game? Speed, right? The guy is 4.3 wheels, you know? So I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, we know he annually ranks in the top 10 in average depth of throw. I think you're going to see more big plays from McLaurin, even if his target share comes down a little bit. So I do think he enjoys the best season of his career here in year number three and ends up with a borderline wide receiver one season. But I do agree with you. I think Metcalf and AJ Brown should be higher in rankings. And I think this is the year of AJ Brown. It would not surprise me if he joined the elites. He's kind of been there. He certainly was last year when he was healthy, but he missed a couple of games. And it really didn't seem like it. Everybody was kind of on, look, finally we get Corey Davis. He finally broke out. But in the meantime, AJ Brown handled a 28% target share, almost 40% of the air yards. He was number four in fantasy points those weeks. And that was with Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith and even Adam Humphries for half the season. So this could be the year where he just really dominates and takes over. A little concerned, obviously, about the coaching changes, but he has a good quarterback in place. And he's the guy, and he's super talented, man. Just efficiency stats across the board, whatever it is, he's near the top of the position. So super excited for AJ Brown.
Yeah, I actually give AJ Brown just a slight boost over DK Metcalf because it almost feels like they're, you know, the Seahawks, I get so worried about the idea that DK Metcalf has some games that just sort of fall a little bit flat, whether that's he's just not getting as many targets, whether Tyler Lockett steps in, whether Pete Carroll wants to be run heavy. And so they go away from, they go away from the pass from that perspective. Mike, is that something that when you look at target share between DK Metcalf and the rest of that Seattle wide receiving core, do you see AJ Brown just having a larger target share than DK Metcalf as a way to be able to quantify maybe, you know, parsing out when you're looking one or two spots between those guys?
Yeah, I think Brown's share will be a little bit higher, although Seattle, most of their work goes to Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. But keep in mind, Seattle changed systems this offseason, and they want to run the ball more. So that was something that Metcalf benefited from. Also, keep in mind, I think this would shock a lot of people. You think about Metcalf, you think about big plays, you probably think boom bust to an extent, right? Well, he only had three top 10 weeks last season. That was 17th at wide receiver, three top 10 fantasy weeks. That was surprisingly low for me. So, and of course they fell off quite a bit in the second half of the season. So I do actually have Brown ranked one spot ahead of Metcalf. And actually right now, again, in early drafts, Metcalf is going about a round before Brown. So he's coming at a little bit of a discount.
Wow.
Yeah. And Daniel, I think probably the reality is that like none of those players are going to do anything other than provide you with a ton of fantasy success this year. I just think that, you know, I mean, it's going to be, they are all going to be players that are staples, that are foundational pieces of your roster. I'm especially excited about both Brown and DK Metcalf. But Mike mentioned this earlier in the podcast. We've mentioned it a bunch. Wide receiver depth this year is crazy, silly good. So many options, and that doesn't even include the players that we think are going to go early in the real NFL draft, just 16 days from right now, which includes the likes of Jamar Chase, Devontae Smith, Kyle Pitts, Jalen Waddle. Maybe one of them lands at pick 12 for Mike's beloved Eagles. If that were to happen, Mike would, I don't know what Mike would do, but it would be awesome. He'd probably get a tattoo of one of those players. Anything else we got to clean up before we say goodbye?
No, I appreciate you letting me take over the hosting seat for the content of this field. I know it's near and dear to your heart. So I appreciate you letting me step on your toes and swerve over into your lane a little bit.
Well, Dan, you did a great job as you always do. For Mike Clay. Mike, where can we find you? What are you doing? I know you've been in the bunker. Where can we find some of your work, or what are you working on specifically that you want the masses to know about right now?
Yeah, so actually the first run of projections is out. So if you go over to ESPN, the projections are up there. They're in the fantasy game. You can actually see early week one projections, believe it or not. So we are way ahead of the game. The Clay projections PDF is there with team records and player projections, everyone. You want a punter projection on April 13th? I got you. It's ready to go on there. So we did that. I also did the article I write every year with a nugget I learned while doing our first round of projections for every team. That's up. And right now I'm writing player capsules. So, it's basically like mid-season at this point. I'm just rolling right through, working every day. And we have a lot of content here still to come, guys.
Mike Clay is an absolute workhorse. We described him as a GM earlier in this podcast, but the man does so much for ESPN. We're always grateful to have Mike Clay here on ESPN Fantasy. If you're not following him on Twitter at Mike Clay NFL, you're not doing Twitter correctly. So do yourself a favor and go press the follow button for Mike Clay and also at Daniel Dopp. Next week, we are back. Hopefully, we have some more news. If nothing else, there will be something that we will find to talk about, because that's what we do here on the 06-0-0 for the entire crew behind the scenes as well. We'll talk to you guys in a week. Peace out.
It's no secret, not a mystery. The one that we depend on for all our podcast needs. Graduate Full Sail, you Alliance fan through and through, with the hippest beard, I'm telling you.